Oh, let's see. Hi, Leah. How are you? Hi, Michael.
How you doing?
Same as always.
Good. It's good to get the T32 out.
Yeah, I got that sucker off. Or I have to say that Jill really did the final go through. So talk her to go to graduate school, maybe. I could give her a stipend. Save me money. Let's see. But those things are a pain to put together. Surprised there hasn't been an uprising. I don't think Dan Savage is going to make it today. Christy Petrenko, are you there somewhere? Not yet. Still there. Christiano's there. Claire. Joanne's there. Jeff Wozniak.
I'm here.
I thought I saw you. There you are. Voted for you. Johann Eberhardt.
Right
Scott.
here. I'm here.
Jones is there. Is Miguel on?
Miguel will be. He's in clinic.
Sarah's on. I'm assuming Tatiana's not going to make it. Tina? Mike Suddy or Allison?
Oh.
And John Hannigan. Oh, he's going to be late. Yeah. And Dan Savage is not going to make it, I don't think. Susan, where are you going on vacation? You're muted. I can't.
Yeah. We're going up to visit family for a long weekend. First trip since.
That's what you said. Yeah.
Time.
Yeah, it's well deserved.
Well, last time we connected was for a funeral, so this is much nicer.
Much nicer. All right.
Thanks for asking.
All right. So it looks like most people are on. We're missing Claire, Christy Petrenko.
Christy's on.
Christy's I'm on. Here.
Christy's on. And Miguel's coming, and Tina. Is Tina?
I'm on. Claire's on.
But he's good then. All right. So, Jill, you want to make some of these announcements?
Sure. So, notice the grant awards should be coming out in the coming days if they haven't already to you. So once they do, please email me the PDF copy of the year five. And if the UH2s can email me their year ones, that would be great. And then if you can also email me a copy of your current IRB or IACUC approval protocol letters. That would be wonderful. And then next week, we'll be having the start of our semi-annual meeting, which will be June 1st, 2nd, and 8th from 9 to 1 p.m. each day. And the agenda is forthcoming. If you have any ideas for it, please send them to me today or by the latest. Well, just send them to me today. Just get it done. And if you are part of the proposals that are moving on for CFAS 5, those are due on June 1st at 5 p.m. So those are our brief announcements. There's a lot going on. Busy May and June for CFAS, but that's a good thing.
Yeah, I'd like to add one thing about the five pagers. If you have a project that is continuing or you hope that will be continued, in addition to the five pages, could you just include a list of publications that resulted from CFAS 4. We have them, but they're in the RPPRs, and I didn't want to send out the RPPRs to the reviewers. But I think it'd be good if they had a list of the publications that resulted from trying to address your specific aims in CFAS 4. They'll get a copy of those aims, and it'll be a good way to detail what's been accomplished, since they'll be looking at that, you know, in the terms of their review. Any questions about that? I sent out a list of all the projects that were moving forward for right now. And, I'd encourage everybody to try to look at those, at least get a general idea, and maybe discuss among yourselves what each project can contribute and what projects are going to need resources. Because if for the NIH review, you're going to have to be able to back up and that the project can get completed the way it's stated. So it'd be good to let reviewers know that if you have that information already. So, Bill, any comments on the RFAs are not out yet, right? So the question I had, do they give you, Jill pointed this out, it looks like it's usually typically 3 months after the RFA appears. So will this delay our presumed due date of August 15th? Joe or Bill?
I think Joe's on. Maybe he could handle that question.
Yeah, I don't have, first of all, I think, don't quote me on this. Things should be all soon, days, not week. In terms of the duration of it, I think I cannot comment on. I think you should have a sufficient time. Let's say it's published in days. And I think it's still, if a day fix in terms of submission date, it should be very close to August 15 or 16.
You know, I think there's an issue with trying to write it without seeing the RFA. I don't know whether we should delay the five pagers.
Nice to have the RFA.
I don't know, Bill, your ideas on that?
Five pagers are due June 1st. Yeah. Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, if folks really feel like they need to see the RFA, I think we should delay it.
All right. So
maybe we could tentatively delay it by a week, and readjust if there are delays in the RFA coming out.
Joe, do you think the RFA is much different than the last ones that came out? I mean, I know.
I don't know, Ed. I don't know if he can comment on that.
Okay.
Yeah, that might be going a little too far.
All right. I mean, I know that there are going to be different emphasis, for example, in the data core, and the dysmorphology core. So, maybe we should wait. I mean, the sooner you get them in, the sooner I can start trying to get reviewers for them. And also, I sent everybody an email. If you have someone you want to recommend to review it, let me know. But also remember that if they review the five pagers, they probably would have to recuse themselves from the actual NIH application. So put in tough reviewers that you don't want, and hopefully you'll still get through. But it's a touchy subject, but we like to get at least one or usually two outside opinions for each of these five pagers. So,
Ed, can I add one thing? I know you've provided this guidance before, but I think a good place to start was Joe's presentation, in terms of the content, was Joe's presentation to council, which I know Jill has sent around. And then also the notices of intent to publish that have come out. There's, you know, there's not a lot of detail in there, but it does give you kind of an overarching view of what you might expect.
All right, so I'd like to leave it, let's say June 2nd, all right, for when I would like to get them in, but if your project is going to depend upon seeing the actual RFA, or you could modify it after that, but at least we can get a start on, I mean, some projects, the RFA is really not going to matter all that much, but others it will.
So. Yeah, I mean, in all cases, the RFA, you shape it a little bit to address the RFA. And yeah, this, even with the NOA, the notice to publish, it's quite a bit different in emphasis from the previous.
So, I mean, I'll let, so, you know, I think we'll have to let people see the RFA so they know what they're responding to. But, if, you know, you could maybe get the meat of it in and then modify it as you want to. And we'll make that, we'll give you like 5 days after the RFA comes out to polish it up. All right, that makes sense?
So I don't understand. So what is the tentative due date, June 2nd?
I'd like to see if some of them can come in, you know, June 2nd, because they're not gonna really need to see the RFA. They're, you know, they're kind of a project. It fits in with certain other projects, but you know, the data acquisition, the telemedicine one, they're going to have some new aims and things in it. So they're going to be a lot harder. They're going to have to see the RFA. You'll be able to modify it up to a week, 5 days after the RFA comes out.
But Ed, if we get them in, sooner, they might go out for external review sooner. I'm more concerned about the next phase.
I'd be able to start looking for external reviewers. All right, it's hard for me. I mean, I know you're doing something, Sarah, but I'm not sure exactly what you're doing, so I don't know who to pick as a reviewer. You know, so
Ed, let's say that it won't go out for review until the RFAs are out and people have had substantial or, you know, sufficient time to at least read the RFAs and tweak their proposals if need be.
But it would be useful to have some sort of tentative date to aim for, because it's five days
after the RFA period. Otherwise, we're going to run into the fact that people will not have, you know, 2 months to write their grant.
No, I completely agree. But I mean, Bill had originally suggested like 1 week. Is that a reasonable like target for everyone? 1 week beyond the June 1st date? Or?
It seems reasonable. It seems.
If the RFA comes out in the next, this week, then we could go like for June 6th or 7th. I have a lot going on in my life right now, so the more time I have, the better off it is. So that's where I am.
Ed, may I suggest, this is Joe. So I will say that, I mean, this is really outside my area. And if you can still stay on the original schedule, and but give people flexibility to adding one page after they've seen the RFA, that might, I mean, give you a little bit more time.
But it might change people's aims.
I mean, you can't just add one page. You might have to rework things a little bit.
You might have to change what you're doing.
Or at least rework things a little bit.
Everybody already has an idea of what they're going to present.
Right.
And so they could draft out something and then modify that based upon their aims of RFA. So, I mean, I don't think everyone should not write anything until the RFA comes out.
No.
Go from there. All right. It's a difficult time for everybody, and trying to speculate on what's going to be there isn't fair. So I think we need to take into consideration. And hopefully after you see the RFA, your proposal, your five pager will be so brilliant, you'll be able to increase it to six pages without a problem. You know, and you don't have to in the five pager, you know, put a tremendous about FAS in general. The reviewers will know that. So use the five pages to kind of get down to the innovation and the approach.
Right. So are we to understand the date is still tentatively June 1st for a draft to be submitted, but then it could be modified after that? Or
if you can, you'll be able to modify it up to five days after the RFA comes out. All right. That should give you enough time if you already have it already down. Does anyone have a problem with 5 days?
No, that would be good. It's just the June 1st. Okay.
You know, so. Well, I'm assuming that June 1st is only 4 or 5 days away and everybody's
correct.
Probably got their outline already done, at least maybe a lot of it written already. So, you know, it's not like anyone's coming up with any really great things that were completely unexpected and out of the blue. So people, you know, kind of know the field. So let's leave it at, the sooner you get it to me, better. The final will not be due until 5 days after the RFA comes out. All right.
Okay.
All right. So a lot of questions came up, and not only from people in CFAS 4, but from some of the new proposals as well. And it was on the implementation science part of this. And I've given it some thought. I know Bill has talked about it. And Bill, do you want to say anything about it? We're going to show that video, the WebEx.
I maybe some comments afterwards, but I think maybe I'll just set the stage. The NIH had a virtual meeting back in February, I believe, entitled The Role of Dissemination in Implementation Science to Strengthen Research. And so because there were a number of questions about implementation science, you know, wide range, you know, what is implementation science to, can we afford implementation science on the budgets of the UO1s? I suggested to Ed that maybe we play a little bit of this webinar. I'm not sure how long he's planning to play it for, but there was probably about 8 or 10 minutes that I thought was really good, being that I'm outside that field. So maybe I'll hand it over to Ed and Jill.
You know, I think the question is, implementation science versus implementation. And they're really two different questions. You know, and I've talked to Bill because the budgets may not do the fact of a full evaluation of an implementation, but there are certain things we can do, and we need to discuss how to incorporate this implementation piece in. Do we do what we do with did with Gantz and put it in the admin core, or does each person come up with an implementation plan and, you know, find their own person more locally rather than a centralized person? So that's an issue that needs to be discussed as we talk about CFAS 5. All right, Jill, you want to run it, and we can stop it when we get to where we want to go.
Dr. Bastan, share about their work too. So great. So you can go to the next slide because I just said this one. Thanks, Janelle. And so I'm going to start with, you know, briefly, what is implementation science and why should we care? So on the next slide, I just want to start with definitions. So you can go to the next slide, Janelle. And with those definitions, just to distinguish implementation science from implementation practice. So in implementation practice, this is the use of evidence or interventions, whereas implementation science is the study of the use of evidence and interventions. There have been a few nuanced ways that the field has defined itself, but essentially you can see here that implementation science is defined as the study of methods to promote uptake of evidence-based practices or interventions in a variety of settings. So on the next slide, I'll talk a little bit about why we should care. So starting with, we don't really have to look beyond this very moment to recognize why implementation science could matter. Just take our everyday lives for the past year, and specifically looking back to the end of 2020 with the promise of not just one, but two, and now as of today, three highly effective vaccines. It was a rare moment of hope back then. We thought it was a turning point in the pandemic. But on the next slide, you can see we all know what happened next.
You had video.
The rollout has been slow and complicated, anxiety growing. Shots are slow to reach arms as those final steps of ensuring that vaccines are delivered were left to beleaguered states. So I think a nice summary of that problem is on the next slide. Ashish Jha, now Dean of the Brown University School of Public Health, and probably no stranger to any of you who have been listening to the news for the past many months, he really nicely articulated the problem, which was that at that time, the federal government saw their role as getting vaccines to the states without considering what supports states would need to get vaccines to the people. And this type of problem isn't unique to COVID-19. So on to the next slide, the promise of any effective innovation that our science delivers can only be fully realized through its use by a range of stakeholders. So how do we do that most effectively? Is it A, not thinking about implementation, not having a plan? Is it B, thinking about implementation and having a plan that's informed by intuition? Or is it C, thinking about implementation and having a plan that's informed by empirical evidence, which is what the field of implementation science seeks to generate? So this next slide illustrates what happens if we don't also focus on implementation. What this displays are findings of a study from 2000 by Andrew Bayless and Sue Boren that asked the question, let's assume that the end product of our research is just an effective innovation, a high impact publication that shows the results of the efficacy or effectiveness. What would happen next if we didn't do anything more than that? So what you see in the middle of this slide is the rough publication pathway from publication of our original research to implementation, which they defined as 50% uptake. On the left side, you see all the ways we lose valuable evidence. And on the right side, it's an estimate of how long it takes to get through each of these steps. And if you advance, Janelle, you can see that their conclusion was, it takes 17 years for only 14% of original research to benefit patients. So it shouldn't be the case that so little takes so long, and move back one before we get there, that, and that's the time to just reach 50% who could benefit. So yes, now moving on, as you saw with the COVID-19 example, the problem does go beyond the strength of the evidence for effectiveness. An intervention is going to be only as good as how and whether it's adopted by different systems within different communities. But also not just that it's adopted, but we can make sure that we've identified practitioners who can be trained to deliver the intervention. But not just that, we know that we have a history of training where providers can't then come back and have the supports needed to actually deliver it or integrate it into the practice. So we need to make sure we're thinking about that as well. And not just that, but that we also are considering what needed supports those trained practitioners would be able to use to then reach all the populations who could benefit. So moving on to the next, even if we get halfway there at each of these steps and not even considering all the issues we would have with access, adherence, dosage, and maintenance, we're still down to just a fraction of the benefit we thought our promising intervention was going to have. So we need to make sure we're considering all of these steps. And putting it another way, you're reading my mind. Yeah, no, that's great. Go ahead to the next slide. This comes from the REAIM framework, which nicely articulates the goals of our field. So these are the other dimensions beyond effectiveness that we need to be considering. So how do we develop organizational support to deliver the intervention? How can we ensure the intervention is properly delivered and can be maintained over time beyond the scope of a study? And how can we ensure it reaches everyone who could benefit? So these are some of the research objectives of the field of implementation science. So moving on and returning to definitions, I wanted to highlight how we use these terms. And these come from the trans-NIH funding opportunities I'll be describing momentarily. But we see implementation science as bridging the gap between research and practice and policy, as Janelle highlighted nicely at the start, by building a knowledge base on how evidence can be most effectively communicated and integrated into practice. So for the purposes of our funding announcements, we break it down into two different components. Dissemination research is the study of the targeted distribution of information and how best to spread or sustain knowledge and evidence, whereas implementation research is focused on what strategies can best facilitate the adoption and integration of that evidence into a given practice. So on the next slide, and digging a bit deeper, the goal of dissemination research is to understand how, when, by whom, and under what circumstances evidence spreads. So focusing on all the stages of evidence from its creation to its reception. And these are important steps that we often take for granted, but we realize we can do a better job. So in implementation research, we try to draw a contrast from what we see in typical effectiveness studies, which tend to focus on the what. What interventions can improve health outcomes? Most studies assume that if we focus on the what's the vaccine, what's the answer we need to fix the health problem, we assume that we'll get the answers that we need. What do we need to do for these individuals to improve a range of health outcomes? But what we jump over is this important middle, and that's the question of how. The implementation strategies that will support the ability of those interventions to be delivered and ensure their delivery in a whole variety of settings in which people are seeking care. And so how do we know those strategies are working? We also need to focus on the intermediary implementation outcomes. So if we get implementation right, if those strategies are working, we should see that our strategies are supporting the feasibility of our interventions, that they are ensuring that our interventions are delivered with fidelity, that they are acceptable to the populations using them and receiving them, that they can be sustained over time with high rates of uptake, and that we're also understanding the costs given the resources available. So when we start to focus more on implementation science, what we are ideally seeing beyond effectiveness is that we can have an influence on those implementation outcomes, which helps to ensure our interventions have the intended population health benefit. And understanding these strategies and what works can help to inform future implementation efforts beyond the scope of a single study. So going back to the vaccine example, and as Janelle nicely put it, building the knowledge base that can help us across the Institute, centers, and offices at NIH, we hope that we can build this knowledge base to have empirically informed implementation plans. So on the next slide, I just wanted to clarify what we mean by implementation strategies. So these are the strategies we use to ensure or enhance the adoption, implementation, and sustainability of an intervention. So these include things like strategies to educate or train practitioners, to adopt and deliver interventions, as well as strategies to ensure that they can incorporate those interventions into their workflow or integrate them into their communities. So strategies to support the fidelity, as well as inform how to most effectively adapt those interventions and implementation efforts to fit within a given context. So how would you select those? It will depend on the barriers you're trying to overcome and understanding those barriers, understanding how to overcome those barriers with what resources you're able to leverage, and considering who are your stakeholders. So in implementation science, we recognize the importance of context and the multiple levels of context that can influence our ability to deliver effective interventions. So moving beyond the interaction just between that practitioner and that consumer, we need to consider all the levels in which that relationship exists and how those different levels can affect implementation. When we've historically ignored these levels, we leave out populations who don't have as good access to care. So how do we best get organizational change? How do we best get communities and states to support the implementation of interventions? Moving on, you can see it's particularly important to engage critical stakeholders and build the evidence base to support implementation at each of these levels. So to the funding opportunities on the next slide, since 2006, NIH has been funding implementation science through a set of trans NIH funding opportunities. Currently, as of last week, 22 institute centers and offices are signed on. Before that, it was 21. So the population is growing, and about 300 grants have been funded over the history of these funding opportunities, possibly more. In addition to these three funding mechanisms, we have the R01, the R21, and the R03. There is a standing study section, which is now called the Science of Implementation in Health and Healthcare, and they have their appropriate expertise to review these grant applications. Over a dozen have been funded by NICHD alone, and I know Dara will be describing that in a bit, but I just wanted to highlight the purpose of these funding opportunities is to support innovative approaches to identifying, understanding, and developing strategies and testing those strategies for overcoming barriers to the adoption, adaptation, integration, scale up, and sustainability of our evidence-based tools, interventions, et cetera. We also recognize there's often a benefit to understanding circumstances that create a need to stop or reduce, AKA de-implement the use of interventions that are ineffective, unproven, low value, and harmful. So that's also an area that we've highlighted in these funding opportunities. And while Dara will describe more, I did just want to mention there are also sample funded grants, and Janelle, you can advance one more time to see that of those 22 institute centers and offices, the scientific lead at NICHD is Marian Costa-Thomas, who I know you'll be hearing from momentarily. But there are a variety of staff if you are, if you're not targeting NICHD, you can see who those others are. Sure. And on the next slide, I encourage you to take a look at those PARs. And if you Google PAR-19-274, you'll get it. But I just wanted to highlight some selected research questions that we are encouraging folks to explore. And these include a focus on understanding adaptation.
We may have stopped that a little premature. That was my fault. But I don't know if that helps or hinders or changes anyone's mind about how to go about doing implementation science. But Bill?
No, well, you know, I recommended showing that video for a couple reasons. One, I think so that we're all on the same page as to what implementation science and implementation practice, the distinction between those two are, and maybe to get us talking as to whether if there are a couple different projects that want to propose an implementation aim, whether what strategy we could use as a consortium to potentially get a consultant or, you know, put under the admin core to facilitate those aims, or if the implementation project is a bigger part of your research, obviously you may want to have a key investigator on your grant who is who does implementation research to help with your project. So I'll open it up to everybody if there are any questions. Actually, one thing I will mention, Ed, you had mentioned about the cost of implementation science, and, you know, the NIH does have these program announcements out there, three different versions, the R01 being the most, the largest budget, and an R01 budget is comparable to a UO1 budget, but we do have R21 announcements and R03 announcements out there, so potentially, you know, implementation science can be done a little less than, say, a clinical trial can be. So,
yeah, when I did a search of NIH reporter, I found all different types, and a lot of programs, not a lot, but some program project grants include an implementation core. But some of the budgets, the R01 budgets, are, you know, are over $500,000 a year. There's one on a big one on obesity. I think $700,000 or $800,000 a year. There are some that are smaller, more focused, but But then you do see R01 or R03s or R21s. You know, they're in the $200,000 range. So it, I guess it depends on how detailed you want to get and how many sites you're trying to implement your project in to evaluate. You know, because everybody's going to want a piece of a pie. So, you know, but I didn't want people, I think the distinction that you, you know, talked to me about between implementation and implementation science is an important distinction. We're not trying to get everybody to get out there and get their product in use by everybody and their brother. We want to see if it's, get it out there and what people think of it. And if they'll use it, then maybe other people will have ideas about how to get other people to use it as well. So then there's the other question, and maybe some people know more about this than I do, but depends on what you're trying to implement and whether or not before you could even implement it, you'd have to get it approved as an FDA medical device or medical software. And that's also an added expense because none of us are prepared to do that on our own. So, although they have made it simpler now for software. So, questions, comments, concerns? I see that Christy sent some articles. Maybe Jill can pick those up and send them around to everybody.
Absolutely.
I was also going to share that part of implementation science is you can also examine implementation outcomes as part of your other research. And as, for example, and well, in our app RCT that we're doing this fall, we have a focus both on how the user actually implements the app, as well as the effectiveness outcomes. And you can look at those together. But one of the things that we're proposing within the renewal of the UO1 potentially is looking at like an echo model with mental health providers. And so you can look at both how effective that was in improving their knowledge to FASD informed care, but you can also look at aspects of their agencies and organizations that facilitated or created barriers to outcomes or using the, or adopting the technology that or intervention that you're training them in, because that can then guide implementation practice as you disseminate the intervention. So that is one possible way of doing it. We were thinking of bringing on a consultant, but that was one of my questions too, is whether that was something that was going to be broader for CFAS and thinking about, I would be interested in if they're bringing it on, engaging that person versus bringing on someone just for our project. So I'd be interested in discussing that further.
And I think that's going to have to be when we start talking about CFAS 5 and we have, we know which projects are moving forward and what the needs of each of those projects will be before we can decide on. I mean, originally I was just thinking of, you know, hiring a consultant who knows something about implementation science to be a resource person for everybody. Now I'm not sure that that may be the best approach or not. So, any other comments or concerns? Okay. All right, so we can move on. All right, Data Access Committee, I think they have an update. Leah, if you're there.
There was a request for letter support from Dash Young Zhu. Claire, I think, works with him. And Claire, feel free to jump in and take over for me for this. It seems like they have some novel methods of looking at individual construction of the brain in individuals rather than like, here's what the group of exposed kids looks like. And they want to apply their methods to CFAS data. Did I get that right, Claire?
Yes. They've come up with a way of looking at individual differences. And they have run a pilot of, I guess, our other of our adult with the neuroimaging. And now they want to see if the same outcomes are observable in the CFAS data set.
That's it.
All righty. Thank you. Sarah, any publication updates?
Yes, I have one. Let me share my screen real quick. Just take a second if I can find my slide. Sorry. Okay, I'm gonna go without sharing my slide. We just have one post-acceptance form submitted. Scott and his group submitted a paper that will be published in Disease Models and Mechanisms. It must have just come out because there's no, or must have just been accepted because we don't have a link yet. So we'll look for that in the future. And that's all we have. We didn't have any of our other submissions this month.
All right. Any new updates, any questions for Sarah? Any great new data coming out of CFAS-4?
No. Well, we have a meeting next week. We don't want to steal our own thunder.
Yep. We do have a meeting. We have long meetings next week. So I would appreciate items that you would like on the agenda and so that we can fill out that, finish the agenda and get that to everybody. Go from there.
Hey, Ed.
Yeah.
Speaking of the agenda, you know, I'd be interested to hear from folks how much of the three-day meeting do we want to devote to ideas on CFAS-5, knowing that you're essentially writing the five pagers in parallel.
We can probably devote some of that time to it.
But the five pages will be written by then.
Well, I think, Miguel, before you joined, we were talking about delaying the five pagers a little bit until I don't want to get Ed in trouble, but until the RFAs are released, if you feel like your project needs to see what the RFA says.
I think we do, yeah.
Either way, we could at least use the first in the morning if you need it.
Well, we will devote time to CFAS-5 and
okay.
Everybody has a project moving forward on that's in CFAS-4. I don't think anyone didn't move forward who's already involved in CFAS-4. So it won't be a problem to do that. I don't want to discuss in detail too many things because I think it wouldn't be fair to the people who are not part of CFAS-4. If we feel on the agenda that their input's required, we could ask them to join us on the third day as well. So that's a possibility. All right, are there any other comments or concerns?
Could I just make a plea if it's at all possible to delay the due date of the final application? I know we've talked a lot about the five pager, but you know, it will be less than 3 months, right, before our application is due. So if there's, and we, I know that I am very invested in getting the review done in time so that we don't have a delay, but I'm just, if there's any chance that we can delay it a little bit, even 2 weeks, that would be incredible.
Sarah, which deadline are you referring to?
The actual grant deadline.
Joe's not on right now, but my sense is the wheels are in motion. Those dates have already been decided upon. I went back and looked. I think the last time when we were renewing CFAS 3, so going from 3 to 4, the PIs had 2 months to write the application, and not 3 months. I'm not sure where the 3 month.
Oh, I thought it was three. Yeah. I've seen other, I mean, you would definitely know better than me, Phil.
That was my misinformation. I spread that.
I wanted
people to have 3 months, but it really wasn't. It was two. Right?
Maybe Jill can clarify. I think it was 2 months.
I think all things are true. So the RFA got released on August 29th. It was due November 29th. But the internal process of selecting what the composition was going to be, we were able to notify people with about 6 weeks to write. Does that make sense?
Start writing.
So we were still going through the internal review process after that August 29th announcement.
But the deadline of the actual grant was 3 months after.
Yeah. It was, but I looked back also, and the recent UH2 announcement gave 1 month.
But that's a 6-page application, yeah?
No,
they were 12 again this time.
Yeah, I mean, Sarah, I hear you, and I'm sure everyone on the call shares your concerns. I just don't think that's possible, given the internal, all the internal deadlines that we have to set here at NIH. And so I think we just have to assume that that's going to be the deadline.
Okay, just thought I'd try.
Yeah.
All right. Michael, any comments?
So you're talking to somebody who usually has a week to write a grant, and you know, maybe that's why I'm not doing so well lately, but I understand that this doesn't seem like a lot of time. I didn't expect that NIH would change their deadlines. I'm guessing without the RFA, since we have the FOA, that there's a pretty good idea what the themes are, and it should be possible to construct a lot of the details of the grant to get all of the relevant references even before the RFA comes out. I'm guessing that when the RFA comes out, since it's really going to follow thematically, the FOA, that people might need to change 10 or 15% of what they wrote. They may organize things differently too. But I don't think it's as big a lift. And if people are concerned about maximizing the time to write the full grant, I would take the time on this end rather than on the other end. I think it's going to be a compromise either way. And I just think that people will be more, there's another piece that's going to have to happen. And it's clear from just how this is shaping up, which is that in addition to the 2 months or however many weeks it's going to be to write this, it's going to be not just the 5-pager where you're sort of doing things still largely on your own, but integrating all of these things into a package that's cohesive. And that's gonna take time besides the writing, and it's gonna require modifications to what people write when the pieces all have to be integrated into a single center grant. So my own recommendation, and it's gonna be up to people's comfort level, is to keep an accelerated timeline for the 5-pagers and preserve time at the end for refining the final grant application and doing the difficult work of integrating the different components.
The SAB, Sarah Jo?
I have nothing to add. It's going to be tough, certainly. It's too bad the RFA hasn't been released, but if indeed the general structure can be well anticipated, I can't imagine they're going to change the deadline either. But yeah.
John didn't get on.
He did. He's right there.
John, are you there?
I'm here, yes.
There you are, all right.
That's all right. Yes, things, you know, the time crunch is certainly affecting everybody, but I want to encourage all the people who were invited for the next stage. So, you know, when we were looking at these things, we're very encouraged by all the quality of the work that are being proposed. And just remember, you know, everybody's working under the same constraints, so it's not unfair. And I hope that gives you a little solace in dealing with that. I hesitate to offer any further directions. I think Ed made a good point, is that not everybody who's going to be submitting in the next round is actually here, except to remind everybody that I think the phrase Ed used today was not everybody can get a piece, but there are more pies. You know, I hope people can see the value of spin-off R01s or even additional grants, you know, that was suggested along the lines of the implementation practice or implementation science. I mean, and lastly, I certainly concur with Michael's point is that how well all these things can get integrated and put together well is something that can be worked on now as people pull together their five pages. People should be talking amongst themselves between the projects, because there's a lot of overlap and a lot of opportunity for collaboration and coordination. Yeah. That's all I have.
All right. I guess that's everybody. Tom, you have any comments, concerns? I'm glad you joined us. I'm waiting to see the RFA to see whether or not we have an outreach type of component to it. But
well, always a reminder that any assistance with recruitment or any information that would be helpful to pass through to the field. I think I mentioned previously that we've added a great many folks to our database and continue to do so. Always look forward to supporting those efforts. You know, unfortunately, NOFEST hasn't had any funds to be more directly helpful since last July. So, but we thank you, Ed, and everyone for, you know, allowing me and Kathy to sit in on these meetings and next week too.
How's the legislation going?
Yeah, it's been held up. The expectation is the FASD bills will be introduced in both chambers before the 4th of July recess. And, you know, we actually have almost two dozen members who are supporting some appropriations requests, try to get a couple million more dollars to the CDC line, the FASD line at CDC, and through the DOD appropriations. You know, a favorite landing spot for everyone looking for money through the Department of Defense. And so we have a $5 million appropriations request through the Defense Health Agency, and actually have half a dozen members of the Senate Appropriations Committee helping with that, or who have agreed to support it. Who knows? We'll see. But,
Tom, I'd just like to let you know that your affiliate in Michigan has been stepping up. I mean, they've been helping Christy identify participants for some of her beta testing, and just connected with Sarah, you know, for some help with some people that she knows is moving to Michigan. So kudos to that group in Michigan for you.
Well, excellent. And Christy, thank you so much. You presented your presentation last week to the affiliates, was met with rave reviews, of course. And Christy, also thank you for agreeing to join the NOFEST board. We're thrilled for that. So,
yeah, Christy, you were on some other publication recently, right? Christy's.
Yeah, I was on another podcast, I think last month.
You're doing well. So, all right, are there any other issues, questions, concerns? Everybody have a nice Memorial Day weekend or whatever is coming up.
Excuse me, I have a question. Because I don't think we got to the bottom. Are we going to be talking about CFAS 5 on the 1st and the 2nd?
I don't know yet. We're still putting the agenda together.
So the deadline is still the 1st for the five pages.
Like I said, Miguel, you're going to need to see the RFA because there are new components to the dysmorphology core that were not there. So, but there's nothing to keep you from writing down your aims and getting them to me if you want for comments, and then modifying them based upon the RFA. At a few days after it comes out.
Thank you.
All right. I think that's about as best I can do right now. And all right. Well, then, Mike, do you want to stay on? Because we haven't yet had a chance to chat.
Yeah, no, that sounds good.
All right. So thank you, everybody. And Jill, I can stay on with Mike. I don't care if you're on. So if you need to be, great. If not,